including people. Mm-hmm. And I think what we need to teach people that resilience is something you earn through trial and tribulation. It's that determination to get back up, to face whatever it is you have to face, to discover your strength, your courage, your abilities, mm-hmm. and to discover who you've become because of those knockdowns. And if we don't have resilience, we don't build those skills and those tools. Mm-hmm. And if we're making everything easier, as I just throw it out, don't fix it. Don't honor it. It's just disposable. We've done that with items, and now we're doing that with people. And that's the reason why the third book is Our Forgotten Seniors, yes. because we're throwing wisdom away. And if we actually tap into that wisdom and we applied it to the youthful enthusiasm, imagine where we would be. But mm-hmm. resilience is something that I don't care who you are or for what walk of life you need to have in life.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. This week's episode, I welcome Sarah Troy, and we talk about the growing disconnect between children and the world in which they are being raised. We explore what it means to truly listen to children, not just hear them, and how modern systems from education to parenting may be overlooking essential emotional and developmental needs. Sarah shares insights from her work on forgotten children, highlighting the importance of awareness, compassion, and intentional guidance in raising resilient and emotionally grounded individuals. Our conversation touches on emotional regulation and why it isn't taught early, the impact of instant gratification on development, parenting across generations, the importance of community and connection, healing the inner child as adults, faith, meaning, and personal responsibility. Sarah Troy is a podcaster, author, and advocate for conscious living with over 14 years of experience hosting conversations that explore personal growth, purpose, and human connection. Through her platform, Self-Discovery Wisdom, she has interviewed thousands of guests across diverse fields, creating space for meaningful dialogue and shared insight. She is the creator of the collaborative book, Forgotten Children, a project dedicated to raising awareness around the emotional, developmental, and societal challenges facing children today. Sarah's work centers on helping individuals become more aware, connected, and empowered to create positive change in their own lives and communities. Please check out all the ways you can find Sarah online. And a quick reminder that listening to the content of this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and should not be considered therapy. If you are seeking help, please reach out to a licensed professional. Now, let's just jump right into the episode. Sarah, welcome to Easy Conversations. Thank you for joining me today. I'm looking forward to our conversation. We were able to chat last week as well, and mm-hmm. seems like you always have a guest visiting whenever we chat, so that's a good thing, keeps you busy. But I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share a little bit about yourself, not only with me, but our listeners, so we can get to know who Sarah Troy is.
Okay, I'm Sarah Troy, formerly British, lived in South Africa, the States, now reside in Canada. I am a professional podcaster. I have been podcasting now for nearly 14 years. I have wonderful guests such as yourself that come on and share the wisdom. And it's about people sharing why they're doing what they're doing. What journey took them to be doing what they're doing? Whom does it serve and how? And it doesn't matter what the topic is. I have 20 different genres. So we'll fit it into a genre that is suitable for the conversation. And it's coaches, it's authors, it's people with a beautiful story, it's people with a message, it's sharing. And I think that's something that we need to give time to. A lot of people have become headliners and everything is instant and downloadable app, and I've only got 2 seconds, and then you're not ready for the knowledge. If you're ready for the knowledge, you're going to sit and listen and learn and then apply what you've learned And that requires this gift called time. And we need to listen in order to invest in ourselves. Because when we listen to somebody else's wisdom and we apply it to ourselves, it only helps ourselves grow. So that's my philosophy around the actual podcast. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, what led into going into the books.
Yes, yes. And we'll definitely jump into the books. But tell us more about your travels. What allowed you to move around so much? What was going on?
Well, my mother and I left England after my father died, and we moved to South Africa, and I was a teenager. And I had 11 years there, and I took some time to travel Europe and the States and everything, and during that time as well, and lived in the States for a while. I was always going to go back, but it was just a pushback. Never happened. And then I came to Canada on my way back to the States, and I met my ex-husband and had three children, cats and dogs, and now grandchildren, and coming up to 46 years here in Canada, which is very much my home now. But I also am glad I traveled BC before children. And because I was on my own, where I went, whom I interacted with was spontaneous. It was very much in the now, and I'm very much in the now type of person. And it allowed me to meet people that were extraordinary, but always looking at the common denominator, because we all have one. We all want to be loved. We all want to love. We all want to feel secure. We all want to feel we matter. We all want to feel there's opportunities, that we belong to a community. So it doesn't matter where we are, who we are, that there's always those common denominators in every country that what we're looking for in life.
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate that. And it sounds like, based on everything you're sharing, connection is very important for you, but also bringing others along. And perhaps there's some connection there with the book and the work you've done. And I found it very fascinating just looking at the work that's gone into it, but even the idea behind it when it comes to our forgotten children. So what inspired you to take on that project? And maybe it's worth getting into, what are some of the issues you're seeing when it comes to children? Why does it feel like they've been forgotten? Yeah, let's maybe dive into that. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot more to come out of that.
Our Forgotten Children was a five-year project. I am a mother of three, now three grandbabies, all boys, keep me busy. But I know what my childhood was like, and I was lucky because always food on the table, but I was a sickly child. My dad died early. We moved to another country. I was always so incredibly insecure, but I had learning disabilities that were not recognized then. So basically just the dumb kid, and always felt ostracized because of it. And so it made me look at other children and what they're going through. Are they being seen? Are they being heard? And raising my own children, seeing kids struggling because nobody's truly listening and they don't know how to articulate themselves as to how they feel. And so it's what platforms can we give them where they feel safe enough to share how they feel and not feel awkward about what they share. And so the book came about of me putting 15 authors together, which I'm one, and each one of them sharing the struggles and triumphs they've had around children, whether they're nurses or teachers or specialize in autism or have various disorders I never heard about, or through music, how music is an igniter in any language, teaching through yoga and meditation, teaching them young. So they have these skills young. But there are other people's perspectives, just like I do on the podcast, and put it together in the books. I hope that down the road, there'll be book two on that because there's still so much to discuss on it. This year is going to be our forgotten seniors on the other end of the scale for different reasons. But with the children, it most certainly, I always say when we're aware, we care. When we care, we do something about it, but we cannot be unaware. And I think that's my platform behind everything I do. I want people to be aware of what's wrong, of how we're empowered to put it, who can we do it with, and what we become because of it.
Yeah, and such an important distinction. And what I appreciate about what you're sharing is empowering the children to give them the tools early on. So they don't feel like they're struggling at times. I agree with you. The vocabulary isn't there. Sometimes those skills aren't there. And unfortunately, they're not learning a lot of the skills in school. So I have so many grown adults I work with or I talk to, and we're talking about emotional regulation, what that looks like. And often the comment I hear is, I wish I learned that in school.
Yes.
Why don't we learn that in school? And I think part of what I've observed is even like my generation, we didn't have the skills, so it's hard to pass those along. And the same with our parents. So you see that sometimes arise in parenting. But the other thing I am curious to get your thoughts on, what about resilience? And what I'm observing is there's not a lot of that in present in general.
Yes. So, yeah. I always see the cosmos gives us a nudge, wink, wink. Pay attention to the redirects, to the signs. If not, I'm going to give you a cosmic 2x4. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to get up again and learn what resilience is. And I think that we've created a society that everything is a downloadable app, or that you can just throw it out and buy something new, including people. Mm-hmm. And I think what we need to teach people that resilience is something you earn through trial and tribulation. It's that determination to get back up, to face whatever it is you have to face, to discover your strength, your courage, your abilities, mm-hmm. and to discover who you've become because of those knockdowns. And if we don't have resilience, we don't build those skills and those tools.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're making everything easy, as I just throw it out, don't fix it, don't honor it, it's just disposable. We've done that with items, and now we're doing that with people. And that's the reason why the third book is Forgotten Seniors,
yes.
Because we're throwing wisdom away. And if we actually tapped into that wisdom and we implied it to the youthful enthusiasm, imagine where we would be. But resilience is something that I don't care who you are or for what walk of life you need to have in life, because it is the thing that gets you back up. And looks at something not of what happened to you, but what's, you know, what it's for.
Yes.
What are you meant to do with this? Who are you meant to become with this? What are you meant to learn through this?
Yeah, absolutely. And that wisdom piece is so important. I agree with you. I think we're in a time where a lot of that is being dispensed with. It's not given enough value. I think there was something maybe in previous traditions or generations where you had the nuclear family. There was a lot of wisdom that came from parents, grandparents. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of that now.
Excuse me.
Yeah, bless you. We've, to your point, the seniors have been forgotten, or even they get almost put into homes and just completely isolated. And that's definitely been something I've observed. And unfortunately, like I said, we're not taking a lot of value out of experience.
I think we've lost what value is. Mm. We've lost the definition of it. And we've looked at people are only valuable if they adore you, or they can make you rich, or they can follow you, they could do something for you. Otherwise, they're disposable. And I think this has become very evident with what we're seeing going on in various countries right now, where that opulence and entitlement is leading the way. And it has absolutely zero regard for life or people other than the people that can serve them. And I think if we look at people as disposable, if we look at people as less than, it would be become a very narcissistic society. Mm. And that is something we need to come into question. You know, why are we allowing this? And we talk about school where we need to teach this, but we also need to teach parents. So you're a new dad. So this is a whole new journey in front of you. And there are ups and downs with our children. You can have a dozen children, but each one of them will have different personalities, right? And some will be quick to learn, some not. And the whole thing is with children is get to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
What makes them tick? How do you communicate with them? In which way? How do they best listen to you? Now, I can't say I've done it all right. Mm-hmm. I've got three great kids, but believe me, it was very turbulent because I had a very turbulent marriage. So It was very turbulent parenting going on, but they've weathered the storm and they've all come out much stronger for it. But it's, where are we putting our value, our moral value, our value and respect for life, all life? Mm-hmm. Where are we appreciating? Where is the gratitude? It just seems to be give me. No, it isn't give me. Do you deserve it? Have you earned it? And do you respect it when you've got it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and there's a lot of themes emerging based on what you're sharing. So I'll try my best to unpack each one. The first piece around the gratitude, again, something I feel we take for granted, myself included, right? It's easy to focus on the things that aren't going well. I had a similar experience last night, ordered food last night, didn't come on time, and that aggravated me. So it's just how comfortable our lives have become. And when we're not getting things right away, it can be so frustrating, right? I often use the example of using dial-up internet, where you would have to wait 20, 30 seconds for a page to load. And now if it doesn't load instantly, we get frustrated. So we have become very comfortable and things have become very convenient, but that also comes at a cost. The other piece I find, and again, this doesn't necessarily only center around children, but the outcomes. We focus too much on outcomes. We want a specific outcome and we lose sight of who we need to become in the process.
Yes. So, get the outcome without the process.
Absolutely. But you may not get the outcome that you want, and that's okay. But you have to be able to reflect on, okay, am I doing things for the outcome or am I doing things to become better? Or there's some value, coming back to that value piece. Is there some value in doing things a certain way?
Yes.
Whether it's sports, whether it's education, other forms of hobbies, arts, whatever it is, not seeking that shortcut just for the outcome, but really focusing on the process. And that's definitely been a challenge from what I've observed.
It's about the journey. Mm-hmm. Just a point, I'm just seeing a straight line on my vocals, so I don't know if it's picking it up. But it's just an observation. But it is about the journey. I used to be the hare and the tortoise. I used to be the hare. I'm a visionary. I see things. Like, you want to open a hotel? Yes, it could look like this and the people will feel like that and have a blue room and this room and this. I know the end game of how people are going to feel. But I didn't have the skills for the building. And I was impatient. I want to get this built. Who's going to build it? Who's going to build it? And just through trials and tribulations and knockdowns and getting back up, I've become the tortoise. And in being the tortoise, I have met the people at the root level, at the core level. I've taken my time to get to know people. I've taken my time to absorb the journey. I've taken my time to, I don't need to lift up this leaf. I can pass this one by. And it's just taking the time to understand where you're at and be present with where you're at and not chasing a dream. And I was very much a chaser. That because of that visionary, I saw everything in completion, right? But I didn't have the skills in order to take it there. Now I meet the people that are the builders, right? And I can share the vision. But it's slow down and be present. And I think this is where in a society is, come on, hurry up, I haven't got all day. Money, money, time is money, time is money, hurry up. And it's, no, take a breath. You'll get far more done in taking a breath.
Yeah, and it's something I was reflecting on yesterday. A couple of my friends wanted to talk about this article that I read probably more than almost a decade ago. It's from the Harvard Business Review, How Will You Measure Your Life? Mm-hmm. And the primary focus, as you're touching on, where everything's about being the most productive and most efficient. I know for myself too, it's tough at times where I'm just sitting idle. Mm-hmm. Even then I'm like, okay, I need to pick up a book and read. And having my daughter now, who's almost 2 weeks old, that's really allowed me to slow things down. Yeah, I could just sit there and just watch her for hours. Or when she's sleeping in my arms, I don't want to do anything else. But coming back to that article, one of the biggest takeaways was people are so focused on productivity and efficiency that they're not taking time to slow down and spend time with their family. And that's where the concept of
how will you measure your life comes up. Mm-hmm. And I see that a lot in conversations with clients when we have those existential discussions. Like right now, you're worried about these little things, but will it matter on your deathbed? So reflecting right. on our mortality, what are the things we're going to think about when we're seeing our life just flash by and looking back and saying, hey, these are all the great things I did. I'm probably not going to care about how many more hours I could have worked or accomplished other things. It's really going to be about who did I spend my time with and did I give enough to the people around me that are perhaps here or not here, but the people that did matter along
the substance, the right?
Yeah,
have you left some substance behind? Mm-hmm. Can people remember you and remember something that is meaningful to them, but also applicable to what they need in that now? We all want to know that once we're gone, we're not just forgotten, that we stood for something. We're an inspiration, because I always believe that inspiration begets invitation. And if we're an inspiration, then we want people to be inspired by who we are and what we've done, that then motivates them to pursue their journey or never give up or never give in. And we see so many people today. One, somebody I have high respect for is Bernie Sanders, not just for his message, but for his chutzpah and his persistence and his energy. He has dedicated his life to the rights of people. And now seeing him inspire the younger generation and ignite that consciousness inside of them. And he, I think he's in his 80s. He doesn't let up. He doesn't let go. He's driven by that moral compass. He's driven by his meaningful purpose. And he knows that one day his exit will come. But did he leave enough behind for someone else to pick it up and carry it on?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
The answer is yes with him.
Yeah, yeah. And coming back to the instant gratification thing that you were touching on, that's an interesting one too. Again, not necessarily just applicable to children, but I often reflect on the marshmallow study that was done with children. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but
I think I've heard it, but you'll have to remind me.
Yeah, so the children were given, I believe it was a marshmallow, and they were said, you can have this one now, or if you wait 10 or 15 minutes, you get two. So it was funny. It was recorded. They're showing reactions of some of the children. And it was actually a longitudinal study where they followed these children into their 30s to see who succeeded.
Right,
and on average, they found the ones that waited ended up doing well in life. So the main message is that delayed gratification. And it teaches being able to put things off and realize that, okay, if I can be patient and wait, things will work out. Now, there's been some criticism of the study, but that's not the point. The point is, yes, are we, and I was touching on that whole instant gratification. You go on your phone, you order food, and you expect it within 30 minutes, someone else is going to bring it to you. So we do live in a society where there is that, and children don't necessarily in today's world, as they're coming in and growing, and I'll probably have that challenge with my own child, but they are tied into that, right? That's what they're, that's all they know. They don't know another way. So I wonder how that study would go now if they were to carry it out. I reflect on that. I'm waiting for my daughter to be 4 or 5 so I can try it out with her as well and see how that goes. But yeah, I think just, it's interesting when you think about it, right? Where
well, you don't wait to 4 and 5 there, because you'll see how time goes by so fast when you have a child. It's just woof. I've got a nearly 5-year-old grandson, 3-year-old grandson, and a 4-month-old grandson. Mm. So seeing those different stages and seeing when they're impatient and frustrated. And you know what my daughter and son-in-law has done is when he, especially the older one, gets frustrated, breathe. Just breathe. Mm-hmm. Let's breathe. Okay. All right. Now, what's the problem? How are we going to address this? And teaching them, you can't address anything in angst. Right. Take a breath. Calm down. Now let's look at the problem. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that they're doing this, because that is something that all humans need to learn.
Yes.
Pause. Take a breath. And now look at it from a clearer head, because we cannot see things if we're in angst. But it's the brilliance of children in what they see and how they speak and how they interact. I have one grandson with Down syndrome. So whereas the other grandson is engineering dad, engineering granddad, right? So he's very much from that way. The grandson with the Down syndrome, anything that has a rhythm, he dances to. Anything with a rhythm, he is in there. He plays the bongos with both hands. He plays my laps with both hands. He dances and he grooves. That's it for him. So I know a way he's going to learn is rhythmically. It's always bring rhythm to him. It's watching our children and learning how they receive. And not one size fits all. This is where the school system has gone wrong. Sit, obey, conform. No, don't. It's ignite, structure, give them the tools they need, but let them apply them. And you're going to see your daughter just so many things that you're going to say no more than you've ever said in your life, right? Because they will finger in the sockets, touch this, touch that. And then it's trying to explain why. But most importantly is teaching them how to explore. And I think one of the things we've lost as adults is wonderment, exploration, reading. God, how many people do not read anymore? How many people do not listen to a long podcast? They want everything 10, 15 seconds. Instant gratification leaves you empty and always longing, right? The more depth that you bring into your life, the more exploration, the more slowing down and paying attention, the more fortified and enriched you're going to be. And it is like that. Take a breath. Take a deep breath. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? And that is something I think we need to go back to and teach our young to do.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And I was writing the one size fits all type of approach, and you said it. And yes, I think, unfortunately, schools get a lot of criticism in some ways, not rightfully either, because you can't blame teachers because class sizes are so big.
It's also the system. It's the system, not
exactly.
The teachers.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yes. So that makes it very difficult. And one of the things I had observed many years ago too was there's something to be said about different modalities. Children learn using different modalities, as you're talking about your grandchild too, and seeing what may work for him. And unfortunately, when you have a classroom full of 30 children, it's hard to cater to everyone's needs. And then it ends up being a one size fits all approach. And then the other consequence I see of that, when you have, I know I was in that camp where I would get my work done and then I would be very disruptive and I wanted attention, or I wanted to be challenged or stimulated. And in today's world, that would be classified as ADHD. Or some sort of behavioral disorder that may need some sort of medication, right? That's a default approach, which I don't necessarily agree with because of all the reasons we're touching on here, right? Children, in some cases, for me, looking back as a student, I wasn't meant to be kept in a contained environment for too long.
Exactly.
I needed to explore, get out, do things. We had extended lunch breaks and a couple of recesses, so we were out running around expending that energy, but I think that's not happening either in the school system as much anymore either. So that's creating additional challenges. You're not getting out, getting sunlight, getting fresh air, running around.
Yeah, then they haven't got gym anymore or music. And both of those things are essential to kids' life. My theory is if you took the money you spend on war and you put it in health and education, there is a gentleman I interviewed last week, Dr. Abraham George, who fighting the war between India and Tibet. He was shoved up on a mountain. And he said he was literally above the clouds for 11 months. And at one time, the machine they had defected, and it ended up blowing up and bursting an eardrum. So that was his career over there, which he was thankful for. And he came to America and he built a business. But his passion was always, I want to start a school in India for the mud hut society. No running water, no nothing, no chance at an education. And he takes children from the age of four, which I, as a mother, couldn't part with. But anyway, he takes children from the age of four right up to university and gives them a whole education on life that now they have excellent jobs and they're feeding their communities and pouring it back into their communities. When we pour money into our children and our families, Mm-hmm. And they have more chances at life, more opportunity at life, more community at life, less violence, less chance of cartel. As my kids were in Puerto Vallarta this last week when all of that happened, right?
Yes.
Less violence altogether and less people having control of the people through poverty and through lack. So I think what we're doing is we're putting all our resources in the wrong place. And it's time that we had leaders that did. But the only way we're going to get leaders like that is become leaders ourselves, not necessarily politically, but community and demand it, right? Education system, it's not the teacher. I've interviewed so many teachers. They said it's the curriculum. It's the system. They don't give us support. And if you allow the teacher to teach the children the way the child is asking to be taught and you give that support, look what kind of society we'll have down the road. Got it ass backwards.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think for sure there needs to be more investment in the right places. And it's counterintuitive when you look at it. If you just observe it from zooming out and just observing it, it's exactly that, right? Not only are you impacting the generations to come, we're all familiar with the trauma that comes with war-torn countries and even the people that are going to fight those wars. So that's already cascading into future generations for children that come up in that system. But then we're also not investing in the children in the right way. So it is a double,
We're not investing in families. We're not investing in communities. It is because you've got such a divide. And if we enriched our communities where people never had to worry about their rent and basic food on the table. This was somebody else interviewed some years ago. She said everybody had $1,000 that at least covered their rent, the roof over their head. So what does poverty do? It destroys dreams. It destroys innovation. It destroys lives. It destroys communities. It's just destruction. And then it leads to violence and it leads to corruption. And what are we seeing? More destruction. And if we actually take communities where we can become the communities, if you're a poor community right now, be enriched and abundant in your heart, soul, and spirit. Come together as a community from a place of love, kindness, and caring. How can you help out each other? How can you come together and be that beautiful orchestra that can transcend the message? But we've got to stop saying it's their fault, they did it. We've got to put the fingers back on ourselves and say, what can we do? Okay, we're a poor community. How do we rise up? How do we rise up together? Because when we decide to do it together, that's when we become stronger.
Yeah, and something else I want to maybe bring forward, it's because it's more right at top of mind for me. I wrote an essay this morning around the foundations of marriage, and my approach to it was just observing, being in part of it myself, but the way relationships are treated or handled, the way marriage is looked upon, coming back to the resilience, one of the things I touched on where I don't see resilience as much in relationships, that there are going to be disagreements. Obviously, there are certain things, abuse and all of that, you don't necessarily have to put up with. But outside of that, there are going to be disagreements. But what are your values in the relationship and what are you committed to? And I think that's definitely a societal issue right now too, where of course, if you can't find a long-term commitment, then it's also hard to have children or some people are not even wanting to do that. And rightfully, it's not easy.
Yes.
I can attest to that. I'm sure my wife has more to add to that right now. But yeah, I think that's definitely something else I'm observing. And you can see a lot of, again, outside of the abusive situations in the home, a lot of broken families because they're not able to work things together and then pass that on to their children as well. And then the children obviously end up struggling.
I think I've done nearly 3,000 shows as a podcaster. And I would say that a common denominator is very trouble started at childhood, whether it was abuse, sexual abuse, poverty, alcoholism, you name it. Very few people have said, I had a great childhood. The troubles happened later. A lot of people say the rockiness was there. And it's then from that, them finding their path of very often marrying the same type of energy, right? And then waking up to go, no, I didn't want to repeat this. Right? I had that when I was young. I don't want to have it now. And then realizing, got to cut ties, got to place value upon yourself. I've got this great picture that I often put out. It's man and a woman facing each other. And then the face in that looks out at you is the communal face looking. And what I love about that is that if we want a strong relationship, we need to come to the relationship strong. Mm-hmm. You need to have done the work on yourself. I know when I married my husband, I still felt very much unworthy of love, mm-hmm. unworthy mm-hmm. of a lot of things, always less than, because that's the way mm-hmm. I've been brought up. And so I'm people pleaser. mm-hmm. I was recovered now. And it was always bending to his will. But mm-hmm. what happened was the dominance came out, the control came out because I was submissive. Right. Mm. And so that eventually just gobbled me all up. And then but from that, I had to find that resilience in myself. Well, who am I? Mm-hmm. Right. Who is Sarah? What does Sarah really stand for? Because the core of me always knew. I always said the human mm-hmm. side of me didn't. The core of me knew.
Yes.
And step into that and become. And when that was actually one thing my husband pointed out when I did ask for a divorce, I've lost my control over you.
Mm.
And it's, well, that's not a marriage, right? That's not a marriage. And I think if we can do the work on ourselves before we meet someone, we're going to meet somebody on a much higher level, on a much more higher vibrational communicative level, where you've both sorted your issues out and then you come together each in strength so that when you do come together and lock hands, you are an abundance of strength together. And that doesn't mean that you either side don't have rocky times or times that you need to support one another, but you've got the strength to do it because you've discovered the strength within yourself before the marriage or before the commitment.
Yeah, I think there's two things that come up for me when I hear that, and I agree with you 100%. But part of the challenge is, so I got married the first time at 28 and that didn't work out. And then I had to figure myself out. So then got remarried at 40. But is that too? That was just my experience, right? And what I'm trying to get at is I had to go through a lot of life experiences before I was able to work on myself. Now, some people can get there sooner. I got there later. I tend to call myself a late bloomer in many cases. But yeah, there is that tendency for biological reasons to get married earlier. But then there's a lot of things that you don't know about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you balance that dichotomy and find the right age, right? Because I know for myself, I needed to go through all those experiences in my 30s to learn so much that now, to your point, I've shown up completely healed. And I think faith plays a huge role for both my wife and I in our relationship. But that's besides the point. I think it's fundamental, but it also, we needed to find that on our own to get there.
Yeah, my son was just a couple of months of 40 when he got married. And he had always long-term relationships that they never went to marriage. In fact, I actually introduced him to his wife.
Yeah.
And there they are in Mexico right now with the whole Puerto Rico thing happening. But he was ready. Like, even though the long-term relationships, are you going to get married yet? And it was always, there was always not... He was inclined to find people that were on a journey of their own self-discovery. And when they discovered themselves, didn't need him anymore. And that was what happened with me. So he was reversing me. Mm. And then he found someone where they were willing to go on the journey of self-discovery together. And they've had ups and downs, but that's the point. You're going to have ups and downs. How do you find the calm waters again?
Mm.
How do you take that breath and come back to really listening to each other? And remembering why you're together in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, the core.
Yeah. Yeah. And for us, it's been, like I said earlier, centered around faith, because that's one thing we both pursue. We both know it's instrumental for our growth, and spiritual growth is important to both of us. We go about it different ways, but that's what brings us together. So when there are the minor disagreements, we're able to center back on, okay, why are we here? What are we doing this for? And where are we headed? And that's really helped us. But then now by extension, I think faith can give guidance and direction to children, but it can also sometimes parents can pass on religious trauma
yes.
to their children. There was a form of that in my case too, where I struggled with that, stepped away for a bit, but came back to it with my own understanding. So having the foundational stuff, the basic building blocks, was really helpful for me to lean on when I was able to come back to it. But sometimes that trauma can be too much for people, where yeah. they completely are sitting with resentment or push it away and dispense with it completely. So what are your thoughts around that when it comes to children, like having some sort of faith, some sort of direction, orientation in life, that there is a bigger purpose?
I'm a woman of great faith, but not religion.
Mm.
I have just found various religions not to be true to their word. And for me, the faith is the core of my consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And my consciousness is to do no harm to others,
mm-hmm.
is to lift others up, for everyone to be, have the opportunity and to know what love is. And that faith starts with kindness and caring and consideration and compassion and that collaboration of working together. It is a divine energy, but it's also our universal wisdom. God, universe, source, energy, whatever you want to call it. It's being able to tap into that divine wisdom and allow it to resonate in our heart in truth, given to our spirit in action, for our mind to know in clarity what it needs to know when it needs to know it. I call that the knowingness. And when I am in knowingness, I am in my center core. I'm in my breath. I'm in my presence. I'm in my truth. And nothing else matters.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is faith. And that is to me is divine. I've just found that religions have become too self-serving to man rather than to the divine. And I've always been a spiritual being, finding it really hard living as a human being. So my kids know that I'm very spiritual, and I brought them up to be spiritual. We literally lived door to a Catholic church. And my husband was, brought up Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And we went across one day, we decided to go to church. We went to this church and they're talking about damn and damnation. The kids are just looking at me and going, what? Where is the love? And I think it's finding that faith inside of you where your core to your divine connection, whatever you wish to call it, is a connection that is your compass, that is your guidance system, that is your consciousness that empowers us in our humanity to do the right thing. So I think if we can teach our children that, and that if we do belong to a particular faith, let them know this is my choice. It doesn't have to be yours, but the core of what faith is needs to be found, and found young and practiced and respected and nurtured. And then if there is a religion that you feel speaks to you as you grow up, that is your choice. But I think we could teach them faith. I say, all of my kids, none of them are religious, but they've all got a center core of that consciousness and spirituality that they each identify with in a different way, but it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's beautiful to be able to impart that. And I think to your point, everyone comes about it different ways through their own experiences, right? Like I said, my wife and I, we approach it differently, but it's there.
Yes.
And we don't try to control each other on what it needs to look like, how it should be. But that's what allows us to feel grounded. And we value that in each other because we know that's what brings the beauty out of each person.
And your daughter's going to get both sides of the coin there. And then from that, she's going to deduce, do I want this side, that side, or another side altogether? But you're giving her two perspectives. And this is what some of the religion is. It's one perspective only. And the more perspectives, and we show them different angles and let them choose for themselves because they're educated on what those angles are and how to look at them, the better. So she's going to grow up seeing, why do you see it this way, Daddy? Why do you see it that way, Mommy? And then ignited in herself to see how does she feel. And that's beautiful.
Yes. What comes up for me in that is we all have free will, right? So we get to choose, and it doesn't need to be coerced or forced in. And I think that's where the challenge arises, where people have their own insecurities and then they project them on to others. And then sometimes that can have a detrimental consequence on children, especially if they're being exposed to that.
Anytime you're going to force your opinion on a kid without listening to their opinion. Now, again, they don't have the language. They don't have the understanding. But if we could meet them where they're at and ask them, what is it you feel? And the emphasis on feeling. Because if they feel the thoughts, they're going to think the right thoughts. If they just think and don't feel, they're always going to be disconnected to the truth. So trust them to feel their thoughts and express how they're feeling. Can you draw it? Can you sing it? Can you dance it? Right? Can you say it? Let's just cover it together. But allow them to have this voice. It's been for so long. This whole children should be seen and not heard. Your children need to obey or be punished. What if they're expressing an opinion? What if they're expressing a fear? What if they disagree? I remember being punished in school by a teacher. She said something. It was vocational guidance. And this is a teacher that had gone from school to educational school, back to teaching school. No life skills at all. And she mentioned, she said something. And I said, I'm sorry, miss, I disagree with that because that happened to me 2 days ago and it happened like this. And she shouted at me and then sent me to the headmistress. And then later on, the headmistress and the teacher and I were together and she asked both of our sides of the story. And she said to the teacher, why didn't you validate her story if she'd had this experience? Because I'm the teacher and what I say counts and I don't want anybody else's opinion. The headmistress turned around to me and says, you don't need to take her class anymore. Right? Because when you have those kind of teachers, they're in it for the power. They're not in it to inspire. And then you've got the other teachers. Like when one son's teacher in his room, he had a bathtub, he had a loft, he had other things. And then if they got their work done and they want to read in the bathtub or up in the loft or this or that, he would come dressed as Einstein. And one Halloween, my son dressed up as his grandmother. Yeah, Sally boy the whole day.
Yeah.
He was great because he sparked imagination. He excited them. And they learned so much more than from the person who made them fearful or tried to control them or suppress them. That is what we have, a nation worldwide desperate to express themselves. And what's happening is they're expressing in violence, which I did a podcast on this week. Is like, particularly men, why do you resort to violence? Why can't you find your words, your feelings? Why can't you find another way to express it? Why does everything have to be destruction? Haven't we evolved from there?
Yeah.
And I think that is something that we need to really ask ourselves. Why do we react the way we react? And how can we take control over that and work through it?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, I agree with you. I think if that isn't expressed in a healthy way, it comes out in destructive ways. And children are so full of curiosity and awe, innocence, and we need to nurture that and let them embody it rather than suppress it, to your point, because, yeah, that's not good for them or society in general. And along those lines, when you mention that, especially with men, I am planning on doing an episode on the radicalization of men that's taking place in the world today. So it'll be an interesting topic. So I'm really excited to put that out there as well. But Sarah, thank you so much for this conversation.
I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you.
I've really appreciated your wisdom and everything you've been able to do. Now, any final parting thoughts around coming back to that notion of forgotten children? What can we do, not only as a parent myself, but as adults in society? What can we continue to do to help our children?
I think when we look at them, don't look at them as less than just because they don't know what we know. Learn to listen to them and watch them because they'll shock you in such a profound way because they're so profound. But give them structure. Give them the ability to to navigate and find their resilience or find that breath, find that control. Show them you appreciate them. Show them gratitude. Teach them gratitude. Teach them compassion and kindness for others and for every living thing. Give them chores. Give them duties. And when the behavior isn't good, it's just, I'm sorry, I don't like this behavior right now. Like, give you a moment to try and change it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. there will be consequences. And when they do something good, always praise them because they're looking mm-hmm. for that approval. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to make it good or bad. We just want to make it consequential and appreciate it and learn to listen to our children. But I think what we also need to do right now, there are so many people discovering their inner child mm-hmm. within themselves. And what I say to you is, please listen to your inner child. It mm-hmm. never had a voice. And that's why you've been flapping in the wind. That's why you're mm-hmm. lost. That's why you don't know how, where you belong or who you are. Listen to your inner child. Heal it, love it, listen to it, set it free, or incorporate it in your daily life and discover who you are and who you're meant mm-hmm. to be. But we left, so many people left their child behind. Mm-hmm. And this is why they're not fully adult. Their child yes. wasn't allowed to grow. It stayed childlike. So we need to do that work on ourselves, mm-hmm. our inner child. But imagine if we poured, my grandson sometimes knows how to wrap mom and dad around his finger. Mm. And he tries it with me and I give him the grandma look. Dad, that real look. And he looks yeah. at me and goes, I can't pull it with grandma. And they know, they've got to know boundaries. They've got to know boundaries. They've got to know respect. They've got to know structure. They've got to know how to apply. So teach them to build. Teach them how to discover knowledge. Teach them how to be wondrous and exploratory. Don't shut it down because it's not convenient for you. Mm, I tell you yes. something, anybody that has children or has grandchildren or teaches children, they end up being the student. Right? So it doesn't yes. matter how old we are in life, always be the student. There's yes. always something to learn.
Yeah.
And then I don't want people to come back to my platform and listen to what yes. you had to say with me because it was very profound and very needed as well. So all they have to do is just put your name in under selfdiscoverywisdom.com and your show will pop up. But mm-hmm. that's the reason I do what I'm doing.
Yes.
Is sharing the wisdom. That's the reason why you're doing what you're doing, because the more we're aware, the more we can.
Yes. And I just wanted to harp on the one point you made, especially along the lines of being the student, when you said the first thing around not looking at children less than because we feel like we know more than them. I would argue it's the opposite because our worldviews,
yes.
our life experiences yes. tend to shorten how we see things.
Yes.
We end up seeing them from a specific lens, but children have this openness, right? I remember when my son was growing, he would point out things and I'd be like, oh, that's an interesting perspective because I was looking at it from my yeah. lens and he was looking at it from this innocence. And I think we need to be more like students around our children.
Absolutely.
And then we learn together.
And you'll continue to learn. That's yes. the beauty. Then, of course, they get to your age where they turn around and look at us as, you know nothing, Mom. They know everything now.
Yes.
That time will come down the road.
Yes, but absolutely.
I think it's the children are our future. Absolutely. They're a gift. We're all gifts. Every single yes. one of us is a gift. But not everybody has unpacked their gift yet. Mm-hmm. And I invite them to do so because inside of you waiting to come out is mm-hmm. something beautiful that you could serve mankind with.
Yes, absolutely. You mentioned the podcast, but yeah. what are some other ways listeners and the audience can find your work, whether it's the book that you've done? I believe you've done it with completed the book with many people. It's a pretty big project, right?
Yes. The new one is I'm Gathering Authors, which is I'm Gathering yeah. Seniors for the next one.
Yes.
The last book was The Art of Forgotten Children. Mm-hmm. And then there was an ebook back in 2017, which if you go to selfdiscoverywisdom.com, you'll find all the podcasts and links back to it. But if you also go to the Orchard of Wisdom, mm-hmm. O-R-C-H-A-R-D, or of wisdom.org, O-R-G, you'll find all the books there. All the mentor directory there, plus the podcast. But that is where I call that more the educational platform mm. and more going into the detail. Always backed up by podcasts because that's first and foremost.
Yes.
And then that's the branch out of it. Mm. The book can be found on theorchardofwisdom.org and also the next ones that, mm-hmm. that are coming up. But selfdiscoverywisdom.com is where yeah. the podcasts are.
Absolutely. And you've been in the game for a very long time. So
nearly 14 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's quite quite the time.
For podcasting a long time, yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Sarah. Really appreciate your time. And we'll put all of that information in the show notes. But really enjoyed this conversation. I've been happy to be in conversation with you over the past month in various forms. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I've loved this conversation and where it's gone. It's been beautifully deep and very rounded. So thank you.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Sarah. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader. The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.